But I know the Monet. It's lovely. But the Renoir.
She shook her head.
That's a very famous piece. I didn't know your family owned it.
We used to own it, Nicholas said bitterly. Abruptly, he stepped back. In addition to artwork, the gallery houses a library. There's an extensive collection of papyri, manuscripts, early printed books and letters. Would you like to see some of them? Acacia bobbed her head. The cashier's loss was tragic on many levels. She wondered how Nicholas was able to enter the museum, which represented so much grief. He led her through room after darkened room and pointed out some of the more important items. The collection of papyri alone was priceless. Acacia couldn't believe how impressive the holdings were, and one family owned them all. Acacia paused in front of a beautiful manuscript of the Quran. Unthinkingly, she touched her Hamsa pendant. The manuscript was open to the fifth surah. Acacia read aloud in Arabic.
Cooperate in righteousness and piety, but do not cooperate in sin and aggression.
You read Arabic as well as speak it. Nicholas's voice intruded on her reading.
Yes.
She avoided his eyes.
What does it say?
She translated the line for him, and he nodded. There are significant differences between Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. But I'm always struck by the way the traditions mirror one another.
That's true.
When she'd finished admiring the manuscript, Nicholas steered her to another display case. According to the printed sign, the papyrus inside was the oldest copy of the complete gospel according to St. John. It dated from the 2nd century. Acacia studied the Greek letters in wonder.
How did your family acquire these treasures?
My ancestors were people of the book. Most of the family was Jewish, although there were a few converts to Christianity here and there. I believe this piece was acquired by one of those converts.
Acacia looked at him with interest. And your family?
Jewish. He studied her face, as if looking for a reaction. Acacia offered none. Nicholas's shoulders relaxed somewhat. My family was part of the Reform movement in Judaism in the 19th century. But at this point, we celebrate the high holidays and that's it. Acacia nodded and followed him to another display case.
This is a medieval manuscript of the Zohar. Do you read Hebrew?
Nicholas glanced over at her hopefully.
No.
She moved closer to the case so she could admire the writing.
The books are at peace.
Acacia gestured to a series of cases featuring Islamic, Christian, and Jewish works side by side.
Sometimes I wonder if they speak to one another when the museum is closed, sharing their secrets.
Nicholas smiled. His whimsical reflection surprised Acacia. It also pleased her.
Maybe they will share their secrets with us.
One can only hope. He winked. She turned in a circle and surveyed the exhibit hall.
It's an incredible collection.
You'll notice the entire gallery is accessible by wheelchair. We have ramps at all the entrances and an elevator for the upper floors. Nicholas's pride was evident. He pointed to a sign in Braille posted next to a display case featuring La Thèse Rime, a first edition of the works of Dante dating from 1502.
The visually impaired can read the signs posted next to each item. We also have a guidebook that features raised illustrations so they can experience the works with their hands. That's amazing.
Acacia ran her fingertips over the Braille sign.
You have raised illustrations of each work?
At least part of each work, yes.
I wish more museums and galleries would accommodate visitors' special needs.
Acacia touched the Braille once again.
Art should belong to everyone.
Nicholas's smile slipped. My sister agreed. She was very passionate about increasing access to art. She founded several educational programs for various groups, including children. Nicholas led Acacia into the corridor.
Tell me more about the programs you have.
Acacia looked up at him. We've continued them in my sister's memory and expanded them. The programs for those suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's are particularly successful.
Caregivers and patients come to the museum once a month and are given comfortable places to sit so they can admire the artwork. We play music through the sound system, or sometimes we have musicians perform. The atmosphere is very relaxed and...
Nicholas paused, as if he couldn't quite think of the correct word.
Joyous. The patients and the caregivers seem to experience a great deal of joy.
He grew somber as they approached a large open doorway.
There was a time when we wondered whether there would ever be joy in these halls again. My sister's programs ensure that there is.
His black shoes stopped just shy of the entrance.
This is the central exhibit hall.
She entered the room, but turned around when she realized he wasn't with her. She lifted her eyebrows. He shook his head. Puzzled, Acacia faced the room. The walls were blank, with the exception of a single painting. Low lighting shone from overhead and washed down the brick-red walls. Empty frames were strewn haphazardly on the floor. Acacia didn't understand what she was looking at. It was very odd to have so avant-garde an art installation in what seemed to be a conventional gallery. Her gaze was drawn to the painting. She gasped. She twisted her neck in order to find Nicholas. He remained standing near the threshold, his body still.
"We left it as it was found,"
he whispered. The painting of Riva Cassira was hung high on the back wall, too high in Acacia's aesthetic judgment. It had the effect of enabling the former curator to look down on the carnage. She wasn't smiling, although her face was both regal and beautiful. Acacia counted 3 empty frames on the floor, 3 works of art that had been stolen and never recovered. Bits of canvas were still visible at the interior edges of the frames. The works had been slashed and cut before they were stolen. Her stomach pitched. She exited the hall, her footsteps echoing. She reached out to Nicholas, but didn't touch him. He looked over her shoulder.
"My parents commissioned the portrait. They wanted her presence to be the focus." "It's a beautiful painting."
His lip curled. "I hate it. Riva was always smiling, especially here, inside the gallery. Of course, we couldn't have her smiling down on this."
Acacia withdrew her hand. "Are you close to finding the thieves?"
Nicholas's entire body tensed. "Close, far. Who knows?" She noted his reaction and moved to his side.
"We should go."
It took a moment for him to focus on her. When he did, he seemed puzzled.
"You haven't seen the whole collection. You're upset."
"You want to forgo seeing the rest of the gallery because I'm troubled?" He sounded incredulous.
"Yes."
His focus sharpened.
"You're unselfish." "No, just human."
Nicholas rocked back on his heels.
"You are most unexpected, mademoiselle."
She looked up at him sadly.
"I'm sorry the world is so dark that embracing one's humanity causes shock and surprise."
"I don't know why I continue to be surprised by you. You've demonstrated over and over again that you have an admirable character." She lowered her gaze.
"Thank you."
"Would it surprise you if I told you I can't remember the last time someone denied themselves for my benefit?"
"You need new friends."
Acacia cringed at her own words.
"I apologize. That was rude."
"Your observation was correct." His acknowledgement didn't seem to require comment, so Acacia refrained. "Suffering is the great equalizer," he observed, and turned his attention once again to the exhibit hall.
"I agree. Through empathy, we can try to have a better understanding of our fellow human beings."
"Riva would have agreed with you." He faced Acacia.
"You and she would have much to talk about. She did an excellent job with the gallery."
"She did. She found items in my parents' house that we'd overlooked, including the Degas that was stolen." Acacia's eyes widened.
"You didn't know it was there?"
"It hung on a wall in the master bathroom for decades. No one knew it was a Degas. It's pastel on paper, not an oil painting. Whoever framed it covered up his signature.
Your sister recognized it?
She had her suspicions. When she'd removed it from the frame, she found the signature. He regarded Acacia solemnly. We should continue. He gestured to the far end of the corridor. For the next hour, they viewed more of the Cassirer collection, until Acacia could no longer disguise her fatigue. Nicholas checked his watch. It's after midnight. I'm sorry I've kept you so long.
Thank you for bringing me.
He bowed his head. I never come here. To me, the place is a tomb. But I knew you'd appreciate the artwork. He escorted her to the entrance, where they were once again greeted by the curator. Kurt and his associate stood outside by the vehicles. Nicholas opened the car door for Acacia, but waited to speak to her until he was in the driver's seat. He pointed his chin in the direction of the gallery. I was at my parents' house when it happened. We were having drinks, waiting for her to come home.
I am so sorry,
Acacia whispered. He wrapped his fingers around the steering wheel.
Although I tried, I was not in a position, then, to do anything about what happened. I've led a fictitious life since, quietly acquiring information and contacts.
He turned his head, his eyes meeting hers.
I'm no longer the prey. I'm the predator.
The Porsche roared to life, and they sped out of the compound. Chapter 23 Acacia had slept most of the day, so her insomnia wasn't surprising. She wanted to sleep, she craved the bliss of slumber, but it eluded her. She'd texted Kate after the visit to the gallery, assuring her she was all right. She'd tossed and turned in her darkened room long after she'd bid Nicholas good night and placed Marcel's journal in his hands. He'd thanked her, a look of triumph flitting across his face. Then he'd put one of his large hands on her shoulder and wished her a good rest. But her rest had not been good. At 3 o'clock in the morning, she'd had enough. She threw off the covers, dressed quickly, and turned on her computer. She googled the Degas that had been stolen the night Reva Cassirer was murdered. It wasn't an especially striking piece, although she liked it. It featured a young ballet dancer whose mother was fixing her hair. Another young girl stood next to the pair, holding a handbag. The subjects of the work stolen from the Cassirers were all different. There wasn't a single thread that linked the three, other than the fact that Degas, Monet, and Renoir were all Impressionists. Why didn't the thieves steal the portrait of Dante by Botticelli, or the Egyptian Book of the Dead, or the manuscript of the Gospel of St. John? It seemed to her that the thieves had eschewed the most valuable pieces in the collection in favor of the Impressionists. Perhaps there was more of a demand for Impressionist works on the black market. Perhaps the display cases that protected the manuscripts had been too difficult or time-consuming to breach. Acacia didn't have answers to her musings, but visiting the gallery with Nicholas, she'd caught a glimpse of the loss that had transformed him into the figure he now was. A man bent on justice. She put her computer aside. She needed air and a diversion, or she'd end up pacing her room all night. Nicholas had warned her to keep to the house, noting the guards and dogs that patrolled the grounds, but Acacia was seized with the inspiration to take a moonlit swim. Outside her bedroom, the corridor was empty and dark. She crossed to the staircase and quietly descended. She passed through a series of rooms before she exited onto the terrace. The night was cool and still. She walked the length of the terrace to where the steps led down to the swimming pool. The pool wasn't enclosed. Dim lighting shone around the perimeter and illuminated the landscaped area and a series of lounge chairs. She hadn't brought a bathing suit, but it was the middle of the night, and no one was around. She doubted the security guards would trouble her. She quickly undressed to her bra and underwear, both of which were black, and slipped into the heated water. She was surprised to discover the pool was saline. She swam from end to end, careful not to make too much noise, and reveled in the movement of her muscles. She floated on her back in the center of the pool, and inspected the clouded sky. She knew tragedy and loss. She understood the quest for justice, but she began to wonder about Nicholas's obsession and the lengths he would go to punish those responsible for his sister's death. It didn't matter. She'd given him the journal. He was having her apartment repaired. She'd be able to return to Paris in a day or so and try to find another position. She'd never see Nicholas again. When she was sufficiently exhausted, she climbed out of the pool and found a towel next to her abandoned clothes. She looked around. No one was visible. She picked up the towel and began to dry her body. She squeezed the water from her curly hair in an attempt to dry it. A hand touched her shoulder. Without thinking, she dropped the towel and grasped her assailant's palm in both hands. She wrenched it backward until he yelped. The assailant twisted and slid behind her, then freed his wrist and placed his forearm under her chin. She bumped her hip into his and used the movement to leverage his weight in order to throw him over her shoulder. The assailant planted his feet and lifted her in return.
Rick was right. You can take care of yourself.
Nicholas placed her on her feet and stepped away. She turned and found him grinning.
I'm tired of being tested by you.
She glared and placed her hand on her hip.
How can that be when you keep passing every test?
He shook out his wrist with a grimace.
You nearly snapped it. You nearly deserved it.
Nicholas's gaze washed over her body, her high breasts encased in black, her thong underwear that showcased her toned thighs and curvy backside, and the pendant that swung from her neck. She shook her head at him and retrieved the towel to shield herself from his perusal.
You can't fault an art collector for appreciating beauty.
He reproved her gently.
I'm not eager to be collected.
If a man were fortunate enough to win you, he'd give away his collection. Nicholas turned his back to give her privacy. Acacia wrapped the towel around herself and removed her underthings. She dropped them to the patio. Then she pulled on her clothes and hid her wet things in the towel.
I'm decent.
Nicholas turned around, his hands thrust in his pockets. She noticed he was still dressed.
You can't sleep?
I only sleep a few hours a night.
Planning to swim?
Working. His expression shifted. He appeared tense.
Thanks for the towel.
You're welcome. He glanced around. Do you want to walk?
No. I took a swim to tire myself. I'm ready to sleep.
I'll walk with you. Without another word, Nicholas accompanied her inside the house.
Should I put those in the dryer?
He indicated the wet bundle she carried.
No, I'll hang them up.
She paused at the bottom of the staircase and waited for him to say something. Nicholas was at least 6 inches taller than her. His shoulders wide, his eyes piercing. Her gaze dropped to his mouth, to his full lower lip and strong, stubbled chin, and then, as if her eyes had decided to sabotage her, her gaze drifted to the location of his scar. Nicholas turned and walked away. Chapter 24
I have to leave for Greece tomorrow.
Acacia looked up from her breakfast, her spoon in midair.
Sorry?
Nicholas pulled out the chair next to her and sat. He placed a napkin across his lap.
I have to travel to Greece on business. I'd like you to come with me.
She shook her head.
I'm going home.
Your apartment isn't habitable.
I'll stay with a friend.
Irritation flared across Nicholas's face.
People are after you. Until we identify and neutralize the threat, you're in danger. What about Marcel's journal? Isn't it helpful?
I'm afraid not. I have someone analyzing it, but Marcel wrote in shorthand.
Then why were those men so intent on recovering it?
I hope to find out. He cleared his throat. You're welcome to stay here, but I could use your help.
What kind of help?
As I said when we met at the KLH offices, my executive assistant can no longer travel with me. I could use an extra set of eyes and ears. I may need you to act as an interpreter. It will be a short trip, only a few days and a couple of meetings, but it will give you a chance to see what I do.
You still want me to be your assistant?
He frowned. Of course. She put down her spoon.
I don't think it's a good idea for us to work together.
He looked very displeased.
I thought we were allies.
We are. But I need to focus on finding a job for the long term.
I've just offered you one. He sounded exasperated. Stubbornly, she continued to eat breakfast. He leaned forward.
You know, it's better for your curriculum vitae to resign a post than to be fired.
Yes, I know that.
You'll be paid well. My security team will travel with us. You'll have separate private accommodations, and you'll probably have some time to explore while I'm in meetings.
It was her turn to frown.
I don't mean to sound ungrateful, but do you know when my apartment will be finished?
It will take a few days. They're going to need to repair the walls in addition to the damage to the kitchen. We can call the contractor after breakfast, and you can speak to him directly.
Thank you.
Nicholas sat back in his chair and poured himself a cup of coffee from a French press. He peered over at the mocha-colored liquid in Nicasia's cup.
I thought you drank your coffee black.
Not at breakfast.
Ah.
He picked up a piece of brioche and began slathering it with butter and apricot jam. Nicasia lifted her coffee cup.
I don't think I can return to the Victoire after everything that's happened.
Nicholas chewed his brioche thoughtfully. He swallowed. I think that's wise.
I probably shouldn't press my luck by calling in sick again today, which means I'll have to send a letter of resignation.
Tell them you've received a better offer from CI Paris, and will be starting immediately.
CI Paris?
The Paris office of one of our wealth management companies. Your contract will be with them. I'll have the director apply for your temporary work permit, as well as an EU blue card.
Nicasia looked out over the grounds to where the Alps were visible above the trees. Majestic snow-covered mountains rose against a blue sky, with only the barest wisp of cloud hanging above them. Mountains didn't have to worry about employment, or supporting their mothers, or persistent Swiss businessmen who clearly had a weakness for brioche and apricot jam.
You have a job offer on the table, Nicholas's low voice continued. Working with me will buy us time to find out who is after the journal.
He cleared his throat. You said last night I needed new friends. Her eyes met his.
Be my friend, Nicasia.
You're friendly with your assistants?
My current assistant has been with me almost 10 years. I'm going to be the godfather of a first child later this year.
You don't look like a godfather.
He lifted his arm over his head. I'm not tall enough. She laughed. She couldn't help herself. At 6'3", Nicholas was tall, but not too tall in her estimation.
We will make a good team, Nicasia.
She sighed.
You helped me when I needed it. I'll help you in return. But after Greece, I want to go home.
I'll take you to Paris personally.
I'll sign a contract, but I'd like us to agree that Greece is a trial period. I won't accept any money, and we can both see if this is feasible longer term.
That's ridiculous, Nicholas interrupted.
How will you?
It isn't ridiculous,
she interrupted in return.
We might discover we don't work well together.
I doubt it, she frowned.
How can you be so sure?
Because I've seen your work ethic, and I've spent time with you. I'm a good judge of character, Nicasia. I sized you up almost immediately.
She placed her coffee cup on its saucer with a loud thump.
You sized me up and asked for Marcel.
Because he was my contact.
Nicholas tossed his napkin on the table.
You turned around and suggested I donate those ridiculous items I bought for Silke to benefit hungry children.
And they did. I received an email from the organization telling me they raised thousands of euros on your donation alone.
Precisely.
Don't you see? We already work well together. What about your current assistant?
Nicholas rubbed his eyes. She's on bed rest until the baby's born. She had a scare and was in the hospital.
I'm sorry.
Nicasia turned in her chair.
I'll sign a contract, but I won't accept a salary until after Greece. I need a trial period.
Fine, Nicholas said grumpily.
I'll have Madame Bishop send over your contract. Juliet has the number for the contractor in Paris. You can speak to him about his progress. After that, your first official task is to put together a wardrobe for a personal assistant. You'll need formal wear in addition to business attire. Her eyes narrowed.
Is that a typical task?
At the beginning, yes. My current assistant was given a clothing allowance when she started. We have to make a certain impression, but it's an impression I'll gladly finance.
Really?
I thought you were a concierge, Acacia. The edges of his lips twitched. Surely this can't be a difficult proposition.
Concierges don't usually act as personal shoppers for themselves.
His eyes twinkled. Think of this as an opportunity to acquire a new skill set. I have a line of credit at several boutiques in Geneva. Juliet will give you the list, and she can accompany you, along with Kurt. I have to return to Zurich this morning. I won't be back until late tonight. We'll leave for Santorini tomorrow. Acacia felt a sudden pang of something at the thought of rambling around the large estate without him. She hid her reaction behind a restrained smile.
Did you say Santorini?
I did. Be sure to include athletic wear in case we go to the beach.
The beach? Do you conduct business at the beach?
He chuckled. If I'm fortunate.
While you're away, is there a place I can practice my martial arts?
Planning a workout, mademoiselle? She shrugged.
I try to practice every day, don't you?
Good point. There's a small gymnasium that should suit your purposes. Juliet will show you where it is.
Thank you.
Nicholas stood and touched her shoulder.
I'm looking forward to working with you.
Acacia turned in her chair to watch her attractive new employer walk away. Chapter 25. Late that night, Nicholas stood in the hall outside his bedroom at his parents' house. It was late. He'd just returned from Zurich. He'd visited the pool first, hoping to join Acacia for a swim. Sadly, she seemed to have retired for the evening. He walked to her room and paused outside the door. No sounds were audible. Nicholas sighed in relief. He hoped she was sleeping well. She was probably the strongest woman he'd ever met, with the exception of his sister. Nicholas's gaze flickered to the next room. Riva's room was adjacent to Acacia's. He hadn't been inside in years, but somehow he found himself walking to the door and pushing it open. He turned on the light. He was surprised at how clean it was. Juliet and her staff kept all the rooms pristine, and Riva's was no exception. But they hadn't put away her things. Her artwork stood at the ready, as if it waited for her. Nicholas carried several burdens, some of which had been placed on him by others. Some burdens he'd taken on himself. His sense of responsibility for his sister was something he'd felt since the night of her murder. If he hadn't rushed her because he was so eager for her to meet his fiancée, she might still be alive. Perhaps the thieves would have left before she noticed them. Thierry, the security guard, had survived his assault. Riva had not been so fortunate. At least Thierry had provided information about the culprits. Nicholas avoided looking at the portrait of Riva that hung on the wall of her room. Guilt kept his gaze averted as he walked to the door. He'd sworn to avenge her death, and until he'd done so, he wouldn't look her image in the eye. He switched off the light, closed the door, and strode past Acacia's room toward his own, as he wrested his tie from his neck in frustration. A tall, slim figure floated up the staircase. Nicholas stopped short. He stared into the semi-darkness in confusion.
Maman?
Chapter 26. The next morning, Acacia rose early. She ventured out to the pool in her new swimsuit and swam laps for 30 minutes. It was a warm, sunny day, and with the Alps as a backdrop, Acacia enjoyed her swim very much. She returned to her room long before anyone else was awake to shower and pack. She dressed simply for the flight to Santorini: white pants, a yellow short-sleeved shirt, and bronze-colored sandals. To add more color, she twisted a multicolored scarf through the belt loops of her pants.
She heard voices coming from the terrace as she approached the dining room. Through the open door, she saw Nicholas at the breakfast table. This morning, he wasn't seated at the head. She found that curious. As soon as she stepped onto the terrace, she realized Nicholas was not alone.
Acacia!
He stood and gave her a restrained smile. Seated next to him was a very attractive older woman with variegated strands of blonde, shoulder-length hair. She turned her blue eyes to Acacia inquisitively. Nicholas materialized at Acacia's side and pulled her chair out for her.
Maman, this is Acacia Santos. Acacia, this is my mother, Hélène Cassirer.
As soon as the import of Nicholas's introduction seeped into Acacia's consciousness, she smiled politely.
I'm pleased to meet you, madame. And you, mademoiselle?
Madame Cassirer returned the smile. Acacia looked up at Nicholas.
I'm sorry for interrupting. I'll just...
She gestured toward the house.
We've been expecting you.
Madame Cassirer nodded at the chair Nicholas pulled out.
I'm afraid my husband is still sleeping. We arrived from Tahiti late last night.
Acacia glanced at the empty chair at the head of the table and its untouched place setting. Nicholas's parents had come home. She felt like a trespasser. She sat down and carefully unfolded her napkin, placing it in her lap. When she lifted her head, Madame Cassirer's eyes were on her. They were curious. Nicholas regained his seat next to his mother just as Gretel appeared. She served coffee and orange juice, along with champagne.
I haven't seen my son in some time, so I insisted on a celebratory drink,
Madame explained. Acacia lifted her glass and clinked it against the others.
We'll be delaying our departure until tomorrow,
Nicholas announced. He gave Acacia an apologetic look. She turned to his mother.
How were your travels? Long. Tahiti is a magical place, but getting to and from it is something else altogether.
She sipped her champagne.
Thank you for your hospitality. You have a beautiful home.
Madame's expression brightened.
Every time I go away, I forget how lovely it is here. The house is usually empty, except for the staff. It's good to have company again.
Silence fell over the table as they ate their breakfast, though it eventually gave way to polite conversation. Nicholas gave Acacia furtive glances, attempting to catch her eye. Acacia didn't want to have a silent conversation with him in front of his mother, so she avoided his gaze. She tried very hard to keep her tone light, but she felt incredibly tense. She didn't like surprises. When they'd finished their meal, Madame Cassirer turned to her.
Would you like to accompany me on a walk?
Acacia tried to hide her shock.
Yes, of course.
Good.
Madame stood, and so did Nicholas, who pulled out her chair for her. She patted his unscarred face and kissed him on both cheeks.
I'll see you later.
Nicholas came around the table to help Acacia with her chair.
I didn't know they were coming,
he whispered. Acacia knew she couldn't respond under Madame's watchful eyes. She gave Nicholas a small nod.
I'll see you later.
His expression was hopeful.
Yes.
She smiled. She had no right to be put out because the Cassirers had returned to their home. She didn't want Nicholas to mistake her discomfort for peevishness. She turned her head and caught Madame observing them, a smile at the edges of her mouth. Nicholas stood aside as they crossed to the end of the terrace and down the steps. At 5'11", Madame Cassirer was taller than Acacia. She was long-legged and thin and elegantly dressed in a simple navy dress with a string of pearls.
How are your sandals?
Madame stopped and inspected Acacia's footwear.
Are they comfortable?
Yes.
Acacia eyed Madame's low-heeled navy and white shoes with the interlocking gold C's at the toe. They weren't exactly walking shoes, but they were handsome.
There's a footpath. We won't have to worry about sinking into the grass.
Madame forged toward a winding trail that was covered in pea-sized gravel. Her expensive shoes made a crunching sound. Acacia followed and tried to think of appropriate subjects that would be safe for conversation.
How did you meet my son?
Madame waited until Acacia was at her side before she continued to walk.
We met at a hotel in Paris. I was the concierge.
Acacia saw no reason to obscure the truth.
Ah, which hotel?
Hotel Victoire.
That's a lovely one. We have a flat in that neighborhood.
Madame peered at her.
I've always felt that concierges were extremely well-educated. Did you study in Paris?
Yes, at the Sorbonne.
A look of sadness shadowed Madame's face.
My daughter studied there. I don't suppose you knew her?
Acacia shook her head.
She was older than Nicholas, so probably she graduated before you started.
Madame's face grew wistful.
Nicholas took me to the gallery last night. You must be very proud of your daughter's work.
Madame turned to face her.
Nicholas took you to the gallery?
Yes.
Madame lifted the pearls she wore around her neck and pulled the strand back and forth.
He hasn't set foot in the gallery in years. None of us have.
Acacia wasn't sure what to do with that information. Madame dropped her pearls.
I haven't been to Paris recently, although I always enjoy my visits. Do you live inside the city?
Yes, in the 5th arrondissement.
Madame smiled.
The Latin Quarter and the Sorbonne. I like that part of the city. It's very interesting.
They walked in silence as the path wound through an expanse of trees. Soon they could no longer view the house.
How long have you been seeing my son?
Acacia flushed.
We aren't seeing one another.
Madame stared at her critically.
But your friends?
Acacia was at a loss for words. She wasn't sure what Nicholas had shared with his mother about her situation. It seemed Madame Cassirer had the wrong impression.
I was in a bit of trouble, and Nicholas kindly brought me here while I sorted it out,
she admitted.
Good,
Madame said softly.
It sounds like my son has returned to the right path.
Acacia wondered how much his mother knew of his various activities. She must have had some awareness. A lamppost came into view next to the path. As they approached, Acacia realized it was an old gas lamp made of iron and glass. When they reached the lamppost, Madame stopped.
I have a confession to make.
Acacia steeled herself.
When Nicholas told me he'd brought someone home, I was curious. When the staff told me the someone was an attractive young woman, I flew back immediately. Nicholas hasn't brought someone home in a very long time.
Madame smiled.
You're even lovelier than I imagined.
Acacia grew flustered.
You're very kind, but I need to tell you that there isn't anything romantic between Nicholas and me. He's asked me to assist him with concierge services during his trip to Santorini, and I agreed. Our connection is professional.
He wouldn't have taken you to the gallery if you were only colleagues,
Madame replied briskly.
The gallery represents too much sadness and loss. It's about time Nicholas became friends with a woman of substance. I'm delighted, and will not be persuaded otherwise.
Acacia was too polite to argue. She liked Nicholas's mother. She couldn't help but contrast her behavior with that of the hotel guest from Lyon. Certainly Madame Cassirer had been most welcoming and gracious. She gestured to the lamppost.
What do you think of this?
Acacia gazed up at it. The lamppost was incongruous with the trees that surrounded it, as if someone had planted it in the middle of a forest in an act of whimsy.
The lamppost reminds me of a children's story.
Really? Which one?
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Just so!
Madame looked at the lamppost thoughtfully.
My daughter was fond of that book when she was a child. She used to come here in search of Aslan. Many years ago, there was a driveway. When my husband's parents changed the location of the drive, they had the road dug up and planted grass. They left the lamppost.
I'm so sorry, Madame, for your loss,
Acacia said gently. Madame turned her head. Her face crumpled. But with a tremendous force of will, her features evened out.
Has Nicholas spoken to you of Riva?
A little.
I was so impressed at how accessible the gallery collection is for people of varying abilities.
Nicholas must have done that,
Madame whispered.
Part of each exhibit has been reproduced in Braille, so the visually impaired can experience the artwork. And once a month, the gallery hosts patients with dementia or Alzheimer's and their caregivers. The gallery plays music and invites them to sit and enjoy the exhibits.
Madame closed her eyes briefly.
I didn't know.
She opened her eyes.
When you lose a child, it opens a hole that will never close. In our case, I'm sorry to say that much of our lives center on Riva, on her absence. I avoid the gallery.
She lifted her head resolutely.
I need to visit it. What a wonder you are, my dear.
I studied art,
Acacia volunteered.
Did you? Which period?
Impressionism. Oh, yes. That's my favorite as well. We had a lovely Degas, but...
She closed her mouth. Acacia nodded.
Nicholas told me.
Madame gave her a funny look.
He told you about the artwork that was stolen?
Yes.
There was a time I thought we'd never be able to speak about what happened. Nicholas must trust you to share such things.
Madame came closer. She touched Acacia's cheek maternally.
You are a kind girl. I don't suppose I can persuade you to take tea with me this afternoon. It's been a long time since I've had a tea party.
Acacia smiled.
I'd be delighted.
Good.
Madame Cassira smiled in return, and they set off for the house. Later that evening, after everyone else had retired, Nicholas and Acacia sat by the pool. They'd dressed for dinner at the request of his parents. Nicholas had worn one of his black suits, and now wore his dress shirt and trousers, his dark blue tie undone and askew around his neck. He'd shed his shoes and socks, and was presently dunking his bare feet in the salt water. Acacia sat next to him in a gauzy, peach-colored gown. Her high heels lay abandoned next to Nicholas's shoes, and she, too, immersed her feet in the pool. It was a clear, starry night, and Acacia watched the heavens in breathless wonder. She could never have imagined her path in life would lead to this beautiful place. She could never have imagined such an enjoyable evening with someone else's parents. A champagne bottle sat in a silver bucket nearby. Nicholas refilled their glasses from time to time, as they sipped unhurriedly. Nicholas broke the silence at last.
I didn't know they were coming.
The breeze lifted a lock of Acacia's hair and plastered it across her lips, where it stuck to her lipstick. Nicholas caught the hair between his fingers and pushed it behind her ear.
Thank you.
She saluted him with champagne.
Thank you, Acacia. You've been very patient and very charming, despite being surprised by my relatives.
Your parents are lovely. I enjoyed meeting them.
Thank you for humoring my mother.
She misses Riva. Nicholas's eyes met hers. They were filled with gratitude.
It wasn't a chore. I haven't been to a tea party in years. Did you know your mother lent me a hat? It was a massive, elegant thing she'd worn to Ascot in England.
The hat, the walk, the interior design of your apartment in Paris, these are all things she would have done with my sister.
I know.
Acacia's tone was sympathetic.
She misses her.
I don't know how to talk to my mother.
Nicholas lifted his foot from the water and dropped it, which caused a splash. What's your mother like?
She's strict. She's serious, but she loves me fiercely.
Fiercely, Nicholas grinned. I like that.
My mother has been known to be fierce, too. She's a Rottweiler in Chanel. Acacia threw her head back and laughed. The comparison of the elegant and refined Madame Cassira to a Rottweiler was absolutely ridiculous.
What a beautiful sound that is,
Nicholas whispered.
What sound?
Your laugh.
Acacia smoothed the skirt of her dress and took care that the hem didn't fall into the water.
It isn't for me to say, but I think your mother misses you.
Nicholas lifted his glass. She knows where to find me.
You know where to find her as well. She rushed home because you were here.
I think we both know why she rushed home, he remarked dryly.
When you danced with your mother after dinner, I could see she was happy to be with you again. She was smiling.
Nicholas glanced at Acacia from the corner of his eye. You wouldn't dance with me. Acacia stiffened.
I've already explained to your parents that I'm working with you. It wouldn't have been professional for us to dance.
Perhaps not. He jostled her elbow. But friends dance.
We aren't really friends, Nicholas.
Acacia kept her voice low so as not to give offense. He looked down at his feet and moved them below the surface of the water. Right. She elbowed him in return.
For all you know, I have an incredibly long list of faults.
I doubt that. He refilled their glasses.
Your mother told me she didn't know about all the accessibility programs at the gallery.
We stopped talking about the gallery after what happened. I continued my involvement, but my parents withdrew.
You should be proud of what you've done.
Nicholas bobbed his head. When he didn't comment, Acacia continued.
Art is for everyone, but without access it becomes elitist.
That's what my sister used to say. She thought art was a necessity, not a luxury. She instituted an open admission policy one day a month. We've continued that. One day each month, we provide admission to everyone, free of charge.
I wish other galleries and museums would be so open.
Acacia put her champagne down and clasped her fingers in her lap.
I don't understand what it's like to lose a sister. You have my deepest sympathy.
Nicholas turned to look at her.
Thank you. A loss like that can't be repaired or forgotten. There will always be an absence. But my observation is that many people find meaning and purpose by focusing on a loved one's legacy, by ensuring she or he isn't forgotten. Whether or not your mother realizes it, you've been building your sister's legacy. You've expanded the program she was committed to and added new ones as a tribute to her. You've devoted yourself to finding the artwork that was stolen. Your parents weren't able to do those things, so you did them. You should be proud not only of your family and your sister, but of yourself. Your devotion and hard work are very noble, Nicholas.
He frowned a little. When his eyes came to hers, they were troubled. I've failed.
How have you failed?
I haven't found the artwork. I haven't brought her killers to justice. Acacia sighed and looked up at the heavens again. She was quiet for a moment.
Do you know the story of Sisyphus?
I read Camus at university. Acacia smiled.
Not that version. The ancient myth in Homer's Odyssey.
No, I don't.
I suppose the relevant points are the same. Sisyphus is condemned to roll a boulder up a hill. Zeus causes the boulder to fall to the bottom of the hill at the exact moment Sisyphus reaches the top. Over and over, Sisyphus exerts himself to roll the boulder up the hill, only to be forced to repeat the activity again and again for all eternity.
You'll forgive me if I fail to see how this applies to our previous conversation. Nicholas gave her a half smile.
It's the effort that's praiseworthy. It's Sisyphus's perseverance and resilience that we admire. I think we find something courageous and noble in the determination of others and ourselves.
She turned to Nicholas.
I hope your quest for justice is successful, but even if it isn't, there is something courageous about the quest itself. I admire that.
For God's sake, don't make me Sisyphus. Nicholas threw half his champagne back with one swallow.
I can't make you anything,
Acacia whispered,
but I recognize nobility and courage when I see it.
He sighed heavily and hung his head.
Nicholas, you only fail when you give up. Every time Sisyphus places his shoulder against the boulder and rolls it up the hill, it's a victory over the gods. They cannot break him. In your mission to find your family's artwork, you honor your parents and your sister by not giving up. And that is a noble victory.
He nodded.
Friends?
She placed her champagne flute next to his. He looked her in the eye.
Friends.
They clinked their glasses together and drank.
Thank you,
Nicholas murmured.
You're welcome.
Chapter 27.
With your knowledge of Homer, you must have been to Greece.
Nicholas's voice broke into Acacia's musings.
Never.
She looked across the aisle of the private plane to where her new friend and employer sat. His scar was visible, so she was careful to make eye contact. Nicholas hadn't removed his prosthetic until after they'd boarded the plane. Acacia wondered if he always hid his scar around his parents. Surely they knew about it. Madame and Monsieur Cassira had breakfasted with them before they left for the airport. Apparently, the Cassiras had decided to stay in Coligny a while longer. During the previous afternoon, Madame had volunteered her design services to Acacia for her apartment, and she had gratefully accepted. She drew up an impressive plan and suggested fabrics and paint to Acacia's delight. Acacia hadn't expected to be treated with such kindness and generosity by Nicholas's parents. Their openness to her almost made her ashamed of how she'd mistrusted Nicholas. But trust was earned. Acacia remained self-protective, but she'd begun to trust him a little. He'd sent Rick to watch over her when the VRB's protection had been compromised. He'd warned her to remove her valuables from her apartment, which enabled her to leave Claude with Kate. He'd whisked her safely to his parents' compound and offered her a job. She'd done nothing to earn his favor, which made her begin to believe he truly was motivated by a sense of responsibility for her because of what had happened at the Victoire. Nicholas's long legs were stretched out in front of him, and he sipped a vodka and tonic. He was the picture of ease, despite the fact that he wore one of his many restrictive black suits.
"We're approaching Santorini. Prepare for landing." The pilot reminded them to fasten their seatbelts, and the plane began its descent.
Nicholas leaned across the aisle.
"You should be able to see the island."
Acacia looked out her window over the vast expanse of blue sea. In the distance, she could see a crescent-shaped island dotted with white buildings. The plane adjusted its speed and continued its descent. Acacia closed her laptop and placed it next to her new Chanel handbag, a handbag she'd balked at buying. Juliet, however, had insisted she needed something of the sort for her travels. Acacia had conceded the point, once again keenly aware of how haphazard her packing had been the day she fled Paris. She did not have sufficient appropriate clothing for professional engagements, and since she was representing Nicholas... But there was another, far more secretive reason she'd agreed to buy the designer handbag. It was worth several thousand euros, which made it a ready source of cash, should she have need of it. Acacia was never without an exit strategy. Whether she trusted Nicholas or not was irrelevant to the other dangers lurking in the shadows. She rubbed her eyes. She'd sent a short but polite email of resignation to the Human Resources office at Hotel Victoire, informing them she'd accepted another position. She offered 2 weeks' notice, but the office replied that her resignation would be effective immediately. They were paying her for the next 2 weeks, though her presence was no longer required. The speed with which they'd accepted her resignation had hurt, but Acacia hadn't risen through the ranks by nursing hurt feelings. Something brushed against her forearm.
"Remind me of the agenda."
She turned to Nicholas.
"Customs agents will meet us on arrival. A car will be waiting on the tarmac to transfer us to the villa. You'll have time to relax before your dinner meeting with Konstantin Zervas."
"Rick?"
Nicholas turned to view the man behind him and switched to English.
"Do we need to go over the itinerary?"
"Negative."
The bodyguard's response was more of a grunt. Acacia took note of Rick's blank expression, which was mirrored by Kurt, who sat beside him.
Rick was now her protector, but she viewed him with skepticism. He'd captured one of her assailants, interrogated him, and then let him go on Nicholas's orders. The thought unsettled her. Acacia tightened her seatbelt as the plane continued its descent. She heard the whir of the landing gear. A few minutes later, they landed on a small runway and taxied toward a silver Range Rover. Acacia wrapped a silk scarf around her head and pushed the ends over her shoulders. A chuckle sounded at her left. She turned and saw Nicholas's eyes on her, his mouth wide with amusement.
"You don't have to cover your head in grease, except for inside the churches."
"I know. My research indicates that Santorini can be windy, especially up on the cliffs."
"You've made good use of your laptop during our flight."
"I take my work seriously."
Nicholas angled his head, and his eyes met hers.
"I know."
He appraised her before he met her eyes again.
"The scarf is very attractive, but I doubt any amount of wind could diminish your beauty."
Acacia's eyes widened. Before she could fumble a response, the plane came to a sudden halt. Nicholas glanced over her shoulder, out the window.
"As a reminder, Constantine is a business associate and not a friend. He knows me as Pierre Breckman."
Acacia nodded. They'd gone over the particulars just after takeoff. Nicholas had handed her a newly minted Swiss passport in the name of Andarta Silva.
"Globalization," he'd said with a wink. "You're part of a new wave of Brazilian immigration to Switzerland."
She hoped she'd remember her new name. Acacia's skin grew warm as she repeated Nicholas's compliment in her head. She was darker than the fair Nordic women he seemed to prefer. Acacia set such inappropriate thoughts aside. Nicholas was her friend and her employer. She switched on her cell phone and scrolled through the texts she'd sent and received from Kate. As promised, the contractor and his team had started work on her apartment. Madame Cassirer had been in touch with a designer in Paris who was going to implement the scheme she and Acacia had agreed upon. Kate had sent updates, including the following.
"Holy shit! I didn't realize how much damage there was. I am so sorry. Claude says meow, which I think means he misses you. Luke is looking for you."
"Andarta,"
Nicholas called. Rick stood next to the now open door, waiting. She put her phone in her purse and gathered her things. Rick exited the plane first and scanned the area before beckoning to Acacia. She descended the steps with Nicholas close behind. The Greek customs agents seemed to remember him. They shook hands before checking his passport. They barely glanced at Acacia's. Soon they were comfortably seated in the Range Rover, driving away from the airport and up the windy roads that led to the villa. Nicholas was pointing out some of the places of interest when Acacia's cell phone rang. She removed the offending item from her handbag. She glanced at the screen, confirmed it was Luke. She quickly sent the call to voicemail, conscious of Nicholas's eyes on her.
"Is there a problem?"
His voice rumbled.
"Not at all."
Acacia slipped the phone back into her purse. He gazed at her for a long moment before he turned his attention to the landscape. The roads of Santorini were narrow and winding, and they challenged the width of the Range Rover as it ascended the cliff. Acacia gripped the armrest several times as cars whizzed past them, far too close for her comfort. Finally, the car crested the cliff and approached a closed gate. Armed guards stood sentry at the entrance and waved them through.
"The villa is built into the side of the cliff, overlooking the sea. Only part of it is visible."
Nicholas jerked his chin in the direction of the white, single-story building in front of them. The driver parked and efficiently opened Nicholas's door while Rick helped Acacia alight. She recognized Wen as he exited the villa. Again, the young man greeted her warmly and scanned her for surveillance devices. Then he turned his attention to Nicholas, the bodyguards, and the driver. Thankfully, he didn't seem to find anything alarming. As they entered the villa, a trio of household staff greeted them. An older woman stepped forward to pass Nicholas a note, which he read quickly.
"I need to make a phone call."
He gave Acacia a small smile. Make yourself comfortable. Take a swim. I'll come find you later.
Acacia nodded and followed the young